Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, former Time Lord, now mastermind villain Peter Capaldi lifts the lid on joining the DC Universe in the new blockbuster, The Suicide Squad. Directing genius Edgar Wright spills the beans on his debut documentary, The Sparks Brothers, His Heroes, celebrating the inspiring five-decade legacy of the musicians' musicians, the band Sparks. Then the giant of British comedy Tom Davis wows us with what's in store for the upcoming second series of King Gary, and Sky Sports F1's David Crofty Croft takes a pit stop to get us all excited about the Hungarian Grand Prix. All of that and so much more on the way. Now, Deb and Dave, tell us who's first.
From the stage to any size screen, our next guest always gets it right. DC's latest offering, The Suicide Squad, hit cinemas on Friday. And here to tell us more is a man for whom talking sharks and giant alien starfish are all in a day's work. It's the one and only Peter Capaldi!
All right, Peter!
Lovely to be here.
How are you?
Very good. Peter Capaldi.
Paul!
Not Paul.
Can't believe you got it wrong.
Can't believe that happened.
Yeah, I'm appalled. Shocking. At that. I'm appalled at what you just did. So he's seen the film. I haven't seen the film.
That's all right.
I don't know if I should pretend I've seen the film or whether you would rumble me in the first 30 seconds.
Well, you've given it away now. We know that you haven't seen it.
But I'll tell you what I have done.
Yeah?
I've run through all the paraphernalia, all the fancy garb to do with the premiere this morning, because I ran through Leicester Square and it's a big deal. It's a big one, this one.
It's a big deal, except it's not a premiere. Unfortunately, we can't have one because of the COVID restrictions. But what we've done is put a huge inflatable starfish.
I know. I ran under him today.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got all the bits and bobs that you'd have connected with a premiere, except for the premiere.
But they have had them, you know, because there was one last week.
Was there for what?
It was for a Brit flick that we.
All right. Okay, well, I think you're fine with The Suicide. As you know, The Suicide Squad is a very star-heavy project.
Right, I see, got it.
None of them can make it. None of them can get here.
Okay.
So that's why you got me.
You could have the premiere. It's just there wouldn't be anybody there to pack.
Well, I'd be there.
You'd be there. I would come. Dave would come.
Yes.
As long as you practice Peter's name before he came on the show.
That's right.
I will.
Oh, right, so because it's all in Leicester Square, because it looks like they're getting ready for like
thing.
I remember Jurassic Park, because there are premieres and there are premieres.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and when you start messing about with Leicester Square, you know, given permission, when it's appropriate to do so, you think this is going to be a big one. But it's not actually going to, it's not going to be one at all.
What do they have at Jurassic Park? Do they have dinosaurs? Huge
they
dinosaurs?
They had dinosaurs, and also they sent everybody who was going a Jeep, a chauffeur driven Jeep, and there were like loads of people there. And so you had your own Jurassic Jeep for the night.
I went to the premiere for Harry Potter, the very first Harry Potter.
Oh, come on, tell us about that.
And in every single seat in the cinema, there was a box. There was a wand box, which said it had a magic wand in it. Of course, all the kids opened up the box and there was nothing in it.
Why not? What? Surely they... That was...
It vanished.
No, but surely that was a mistake. Surely they'd just forgotten to put the wands in. They wouldn't just prepare the box, would they?
You could have put a chopstick in, couldn't you, and sort of passed it off.
There is a wand shop in London, isn't there? There is a wand shop.
I have no idea. I think at that time, Harry Potter, they didn't know whether it was going to be successful or not.
Well, they do now.
They weren't investing in it the way they would now.
Right. The story about this film, anyhow, is interesting because we've been having a look here, because it's not a remake, but it is a remake. But it's a reimagining of something that happened in 2016, which is Suicide Squad. This is The Suicide Squad. And we think it might be the most recent reimagining of a film after the original, because it's only 5 years and here we are.
Yeah.
So how much do you know about that?
I don't know anything about it. I liked the first one. I thought the first one was fun. I don't really know what the story is, why there seems to be some notoriety attached to it. I don't know what it is. It made a a lot of money.
Shedload.
I made a shedload of
money. Which sounds like the word you were going to say and gets everybody worried.
So, yeah.
But it's really great. It's good to say shedload. I like a shedload of everything.
So no matter what people might think of it, it did make a lot of money.
It made $700 odd million.
Really?
Wow. Did. Yeah, but was critically panned.
All right, okay. I thought it was quite fun. But this, James Gunn, who made this movie, I think, who is, I think, one of our kind of movie geniuses, just wanted to make The Suicide Squad. He always loved this comic. And when he was given the opportunity to choose what he wanted to do, he decided to do this. So it's made with great heart and enthusiasm from his point
of view. Because you're so articulate. Can you imagine for us on the air what it's like making a movie, you know, of this genre on this scale? Is it as big as we all hope and wish it is?
It's absolutely huge. But this is the thing that I always think about these movies. You know, they've got to be made with the enthusiasm of like a geek.
Right.
It's got to be somebody at the heart of it who loves it and who is able to endure, you know, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning every day and facing, you know, a crew of 250 people, most of whom, you know, look like builders, saying, oh, that won't work, Gav, this won't work, you can't do this, you can't do that. And trying to keep your love for their project alive through all that is the key to it. I used to see this with Paddington. I did two of the Paddington movies, and Paul King, who directed those, was absolutely amazing. And I thought, how can you keep this love for this little bear alive when we're standing here, you know, and the rain is coming and the sun should be shining, the lights aren't working, the police want to move you on, and it would be much better to be sitting having a cup of coffee somewhere, but you've got to keep it all alive. So James does that, you know, in spades. It's the level of skill, the level of craft that's involved is extraordinary. So I think with a lot of these big movies, you get, when, you know, people come out and sell them, we all like to say, oh, what a laugh we had, how hilarious it was. And everybody falls about on Graham Norton saying how hysterical the whole experience was. But in fact, it's a gigantic factory that has to deliver this major product at the end of the day. And somebody has to do that, and that's James.
And you guys, and you know, everybody around the wardrobe, makeup, everybody, even the people
incredible.
Driving in the morning.
Incredible.
You saw me shaking my head there. You know, the production of anything that can be seen as opposed to anything that can be just heard. That's why I love radio, you know.
Yeah.
Even like a weekly telly show, even like a chat show.
Yeah.
You know, it makes your headache, you know.
Well, at one point on Suicide Squad, I know there was 2,000 people working on it, you know. So
have to be coordinated.
All have
to be there for a reason, you know, and it's a chain, and you're only as strong as your weakest link, and it's oh so true.
Yeah.
And then if the chain doesn't break, the stars all still have to be aligned for it to even have a sniff of being a hit in the first place.
Hey, it's great fun.
No, of course it is.
What that's the amazing thing is that through all of that, somebody through willpower, you know, creates this thing that's and that's the way with movies anyway. That's what trying to do anything is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, creativity is a kind of struggle against the obstacles that you throw up. You could just not bother. You could just think, I've got an idea. I'll just go and have a latte and just doodle in a book. I won't actually go out and try and make something, because that causes, you know, that's hard. But yeah, no, it's amazing. So it's a fun movie.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Musical bank heists, a zombie apocalypse, and television that defined a generation. Our next guest just keeps hitting the right spot. His documentary debut, The Sparks Brothers, is in cinemas tomorrow. And here to tell us more is a director that's never wrong, because he's always Edgar Wright!
Good morning, Edgar!
What a lovely intro. Thank you.
He's good, isn't he? He's very good. Unfortunately, now you have to put up with my questions. Edgar, for people who don't know, give us the elevator pitch for the phenomenon that is the Sparks Brothers.
Well, the tagline on the poster is your favourite band's favourite band, because Sparks have been going for more than 50 years. In fact, their first album was 50 years ago this year. And they're one of those bands that, even though they've had kind of hits over the years, they've usually been in different countries at different times, and I would say that they're one of those bands that are like massively influential in terms of, and in the documentary, you know, there's, if you haven't heard of Sparks before, you've definitely heard of the other artists who are talking about Sparks. So I just wanted to make like a movie to show like not only how brilliant they've been consistently for like half a century, and also just show how influential they've been like to sort of music in all sorts of genres.
Well, good for you, pal, because the last time I looked, movies do not take 5 minutes to make. So this is a huge undertaking. What about the risk and reward element of it, in as much, you know, as your energy, your effort, your time, and how many people might get to watch it? Was that a consideration of yours, or did you just have to do this?
I think it was that thing where I didn't have it on my like checklist of things to do of must make documentary. But I guess about 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I started saying aloud to friends of mine, somebody should make a documentary about Sparks. So I kind of like willed it into existence by, you know, I kept saying that until one of my friends, a fellow director, said, you should make the documentary on Sparks. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, I will. So, and then I pitched the idea to Ron and Russell Mayall from Sparks, and, you know, and they were, because they were fans of my movies, they said yes. And so it was something that was just jumping into the unknown a little bit, because I'd never done a documentary before. But I felt so passionately, having been a big fan of music documentaries and having seen a lot of documentaries about bands a tenth as prolific as Sparks, I felt like these guys deserve, like, you know, deserve everything. So I really want to like sort of give them the, you know, the tribute they rightly deserve.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar, I love it. First of all, you know, the fact that when we get people on this show, whether they've made a movie or they've written a book or whatever they might be up to, we just had Dr. Chris Van Tulleken on talking about his latest podcast. It's often when they've made something that they wanted to exist, but it didn't, so they had to, you end up getting the best product.
I mean, that's pretty much the case with the films I make as well. It's usually you know, it's something like the kind of film that I would want to see, or if it's a genre, it's like the kind of film that I miss. It's like, oh, I wish there was another film like this, you know. So that's sort of the thing, is that it all has to, because, like you said, because they all take, you know, minimum like 3 years to make, you've got to be really into it to do it, you know.
So for people who don't speak Sparks, they are the minimalists that became popular but were a bit too much for anyone. So minimalists that are a bit too much for people sometimes. Also, the Enigmas, they were forever enigmatic but not so secretive. I mean, you know, there is no playbook here, is there? Well, not one that we can recognise, but one that you try and analyse and deconstruct for us.
Yeah, I guess the thing with them is that, like, they're so sort of, they're so playful in what they do. And I think the thing about Sparks is they themselves are really serious about being funny, in terms of, I don't think that anything that they do is insincere. They love pop music. They're really like sort of, but they also love playing with the form. And I think sometimes if anything has held them back from being as big as, say, Queen or something like that, it's because like some people kind of like don't know whether they're supposed to be in on a joke or not.
Yeah.
And you know, on the flip side, that's the quality also for people like me that has made me like a total Sparks obsessive, because I even remember when I saw them on TV for the first time when I was 5, watching Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
When they were on with like Beat the Clock, and aside from the music, I just felt that even then at age 5, I knew that something was up, because it was like this band that's like sandwiched between the Nolans and ABBA.
I agree.
Like, they're staring right at me, and you kind of feel like, am I in trouble? What's happening?
I know. I agree entirely. They stood out. They were just awkward. They were like playful. It was like they were somewhere in between not so serious and perhaps cynical, which is what you were alluding to there. You know, and then you see the Pet Shop Boys, you know, years and years later, or Yazoo, or I don't know. I mean, you know, name them all. And you think, oh. You know, Gary Newman, you know, stood stock still behind his keyboard.
Well, Vince Clarke says that in the film. He says that, like, basically Vince Clarke says in the film that, like, himself, you know, the Pet Shop Boys, Duran Duran, countless others, kind of soft sell, sort of took the, you know, even just the aesthetic template from Sparks in terms of, like, you know, performing on TV, in terms of having a moody synth player staring at the camera, and then the kind of energetic frontman, you know, so it was definitely like, it was funny because, you know, those singles, I mean, and obviously they existed before that as well, but that was the first time I'd seen them, was on in 1979. But that sort of became the playbook for so many artists for the next 15 years, you know?
Thank you so much, Edgar. It's awesome talking to you.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Sounds great, doesn't it? Do you know what? It sounds great, and it is great. It's the Sparks Brothers. It's available tomorrow on general release.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Dabba Dave, who's next on the show?
Big, bold, brassy mainstream comedy isn't easy to pull off, unless, of course, you're our next guest. Series 2 of the hilarious King Gary starts tonight at 9:30 on BBC One, and here to tell us all about it is his right royal highness, the Diamond Geezer crowd pleaser that is Tom Davis!
Big Tom, live and direct from Crete, I'm hearing. Good morning, Tom.
Yes, loving a bit of Crete. Well, I've got to say loving, but I'll tell you, what I've realised is I'm a mild, sort of weathered, rainy, weathered kind of... This heat is not great for a big man.
It's not great for a big man. You want to be pale and pink and big as well. It's even worse, Tom, I've got to tell you that. So give us the skinny on going away. What's it like to be away? Is it different? Is it like nothing's changed? Did it take you a while to sort of acclimatise to the fact you were on holiday and you could just have an almost normal time?
I think it took me 3 days just to realise the fact that it's like escaping. You know, The Great Escape, the film?
Yeah.
It generally felt like that. Even though you go through all the laws, you know, I've been double vaccinated, but you feel like constantly at any time that someone's going to tap you on the shoulder and go on, off you go. I'm like everyone else in the country, I sort of, you know, cancelled holidays, not been away. So I sort of had a week window. I'm very fortunate. I've sort of back-to-back work this year and I was very fortunate really to be able to grab a week where I could get away and just have a week away with the wife.
So, King Gary, it's been a while. I mean, would that be down to lockdown? Has he been locked down? Do we see him coming out of lockdown? Is there any COVID references? What's going on with King Gary and coronavirus?
So we like with the Christmas special, really, we never wanted to sort of mention COVID and the whole corona. I think everyone's, I'd imagine, anyway, I'm certainly sick of sort of hearing about it and reading about it. I think we wanted to make sure it's free of that and sort of, you know, hopefully when these things last, you know, these sitcoms, you're watching them in 3 or 4 years' time, you don't want to be reminded of what's been an abhorrent sort of time. Yeah. So, no, it was, but obviously filming, we were supposed to have sort of done stuff last year. All filming's just been put back. But, Gary would have been an absolute nightmare in lockdown. I have no doubt of that you'd have been absolutely hell to be around. It was just a joy to be back filming, really, Chris. I've got to say, I loved every minute of, you know, I think that's the thing with our industry. It's, you know, the sort of doing live stuff or filming, and you realise how blessed you are to be doing it. And it's so nice to get back and sort of being amongst it.
Yeah, well, you giggle then when you said, you know, Gary would have been an absolute nightmare in lockdown. You giggled, and you giggled because for Gary, see Tom. So how was Tom in lockdown, and what might have got into the script? Should Gary have experienced it on the telly?
Well, you know what? A lot of it, like things like the skip,
yeah.
that happened. I got a skip and everyone took absolute advantages of the skip. I don't know if you've ever had a skip. The skip liberties are a big, big thing.
Oh, I know.
Got a skip and went around the neighbours and said, look, if anyone wants to sort of like throw sand in the skip, they're more than welcome. But don't take liberties type thing. The first day there, Chris, someone's thrown a mirror, right, in the skip. But what they've done is they put an unbroken mirror in the bottom of the skip. That's the worst thing I've seen in humanity for a long time, because someone else is going to have to break that mirror and be gone with 7 years of cursed bad luck, aren't they?
Yeah. No, skip liberty is interesting. We had 3 or 4 consecutive mini skips, because that's another thing. What size skip do you go for? We had 3 or 4 mini skips because we had a new kitchen put in. Still a job that is ongoing, work in progress. And it's fun for a while. Our neighbours had a skip. I had a little look in their skip and I actually picked something from the skip. And I finagled it back into our house because it was a signed menu from Langan's, my favourite restaurant, signed by Yul Brynner. And I thought, well, I'm having that. Why would you throw that away?
Wow. Why would someone throw that away?
I don't know. They have lots of signed menus from Langan's. You want to meet my neighbours? Completely different to Gary's. So you can imagine probably how and why. So you tease us in the opening scenes of the first episode of Series 2, King Gary tonight on BBC One at 9:30. We think Terry and Gary are getting married. I mean, they are, but they're not quite getting married when we are hijinxed into thinking that's the case.
Yeah, that was the director and co-writer, the guy I write with, James DeFrond. He loves a little twist. So something for the audience. And we were blessed to have Charlotte Albury, who's incredible. She's an amazing singer. She's done like the Ellen Show and stuff. But yeah, she's a big fan of the show and one of Essex's finest performers. So she came down and sang for us. But yeah, it's like a little rug pull.
Yeah, but Gary and Terry are in the church and we see them in the pews, but they're not invited at all. So what are they doing there?
It's wedding tips, Chris. I don't know if you did this, but it's good to go to as many, before you get married, go to as many weddings as you can. Well, then you can see what other mistakes people are making.
Yeah, I went to two of my own before this one. That was interesting. I mean, that's taking research a bit too far, maybe. But anyhow, moving swiftly on. We can laugh about it now. Of course, we can. Hopefully, all of us together, hand in hand. No, but it's good, isn't it? It's a good tip. Go and recce other people's weddings, whether you know them or not. I mean, that's what's going on with Terry and Gary.
Yeah, have a little sniff about. I mean, you haven't got to go into the wedding. Maybe just sort of look in from the door or a window. It's good to, Prosecco van. We found out about a Prosecco van for us just by sort of going to another couple of weddings.
Who doesn't want a Prosecco van? I mean, you know,
mate.
You win the Euro Millions tonight. I don't know what they are tonight, but you win the Euro Millions tonight. You pay for all these mortgages that you know and love, and then you get yourself a Prosecco van. Next to go
24/7 Prosecco van.
Yeah, to go next to your Pimm's van. Oh, who doesn't want? Because the only place that does Pimm's on draft last time I looked is Wimbledon, isn't it? I don't know why they don't do it anywhere else anyway. I don't know. Do they do it in Crete? What's big on the cold drinks in Crete? Come on, what's the big man been enjoying, Tom, over the last few days?
I've been smashing back an old pineapple cooler of an evening.
Come on.
Which is a bit of white wine, pineapple juice. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really a nice, it's a nice blend.
Sounds like sick in a glass, if I'm being honest. Tom, it's great to talk to you. I love you. Come and see us when you
Big
can.
Love, I will do.
Wish we were there. You probably don't. When are you jumping back on a plane? When are you expected back in the UK?
Sunday.
All right, pal. Thanks so much.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, we've heard from three cream of the crop guests already, but still to come. Rugby presenter Craig Doyle updates us on the British and Irish Lions tour with live coverage heard exclusively across the TalkSport network. Best-selling author Michael Pollan helps us to rethink our relationship with what we call drugs in his eye-opening book, This Is Your Mind on Plants. One half of the Tip Top Twins, Dr. Chris Van Tulleken, chews the fat around processed foods in his podcast, A Thorough Examination, with Dr. Chris and Zand. Plus, the wonderful Gabby Roslin and Sam Pinkham have a chinwag with Superchef Simon Rimmer, who waxes lyrical about season two of his podcast, Grilling. So let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Max isn't happy with Lewis, Mercedes aren't happy with Red Bull, and we're loving every minute of it. That's right, the Hungarian Grand Prix is live and exclusive this weekend on Sky Sports F1. And here to get us up to speed is a man known for his love of going out on the goulash. It's Crofty!
All right, Crofty, who definitely wasn't in the shower. Morning, Crofty.
Shower fresh at all. How are we all?
Very well, very well. Really looking forward to the Hungarian Grand Prix, because I thought, in my mad half a brain cell mind, that we'd already hit the summer break, so this is a bonus in you know, on my purview for F1. And it's funny because I need you to help me catch up, because I've completely forgotten. Dave's intro gave us a bit of an insight into where we left off, but bring us up to date if you don't mind, David.
Yes, when we last saw Max Verstappen, he was heading off to Coventry Hospital for some checks after crashing into the barrier at 51G, 180 miles an hour at Silverstone. Red Bull think it was Lewis's fault. The stewards at the time thought it was Lewis's fault, gave him a 10-second penalty. Red Bull don't think that's enough, so they're going to see the stewards today to try and get Lewis to have a bigger penalty. And we'll find out at about 4:30 whether there's going to be an appeal over the incident at Silverstone. Max says he wants to move on. Lewis is not saying much yet, but they're both going to be talking today, and they're both going to be on the track this weekend, because this championship battle has just got very, very tasty indeed. Red Bull is furious with what happened at Silverstone. Lewis is back in the hunt after the win, and they've got about 600 metres down into turn one on Sunday to try and stop the talking, start the argument on track, and we'll see who comes out. top.
Interesting, Crofty, isn't it? Psychologically, you know, who is going to be filled with more trepidation going into that corner? You would probably guess Lewis, bizarrely.
Well, yeah. Lewis is an expert in Hungary. He's right. won here 8 times in the past. He absolutely adores this track. Max has never won here, and he's only finished second in the last couple of years. But Lewis is now on that wave of momentum after a brilliant Silverstone for him. So he knows he's back in the hunt, doesn't want to throw it all away into one corner, but he also knows that he's probably still in the inferior car when it comes to performance on track. So he's got to make the most of his opportunities. Hence, he needs to get in front of Max as soon as he possibly can at a track that's difficult to overtake.
Yep.
And then try and hang on for the win. So, yeah, I agree with you. He's going to have a lot of trepidation. But also, because Max is in the lead of the championship, he's going to be feeling a little bit nervy going to that corner as well, because he's got a lead to lose. So that, to me, sets up a perfect scenario for what could be an enthralling race on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And I think, because technically also, Lewis is on a bit of a yellow card, isn't he, really? I don't want to trivialise it, but he's sort of on the naughty step. And I think whoever gets on pole, I think whoever's second, they're just not going to want to cause another accident, because we're not in the 70s, we're not in the 80s. And the world is watching, you know, and post-race interviews now go much deeper and you know, much wider than they ever used to, and you know, there's more in the chatosphere about races you know, after and in between than during. And I think whoever gets on pole will come out of that corner in first position, because I don't think the other person, whoever that may be, will want to cause an accident, if indeed they are one and two on pole,
which I fully expect them to be, because they're the best two drivers at the moment. Saying that though, third on the grid here in Hungary is not a bad place if you want to be leading into the first corner.
Yeah.
And we've seen plenty of drivers go from third to first as well. The talking has been done by Christian Horner and Toto Wolff. The mudslinging is going on between those two at the moment, and Lewis and Max are keeping quite calm, but Red Bull were just incensed at the way Mercedes celebrated what Christian Horner told us on Sky was a hollow victory at Silverstone. I think he's wrong in that. It wasn't a hollow victory at all. It was a very well fought race by Lewis Hamilton in the end, but there's just so much being set up. And I can't wait to see what then transpires on the track. And you mentioned it's a bonus race for yourself, but it's a massively important race as we go into that summer break.
Yeah.
Because the drivers are going to go and take a couple of weeks off, and one of them, Max or Lewis, is going to have more of a smile on their face as they lay back on the sun lounger sipping pina coladas for a couple of weeks than the other, I think.
See, in a way, you want to be third on the grid, because if you just sit back and ease off, you never know what's going to happen in front of you.
Ah, yes. It has happened before. And that's what Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez, who needs to buck up his ideas in qualifying. He's doing okay in the races, not Silverstone, but he needs to buck up his ideas in qualifying. Or Charles Leclerc, because Charles Leclerc could be right there on that second row and maybe leading a race for the second race running. I thought he was a superstar at Silverstone. And it was a bit gutting that, you know, with 5 laps to go, he got overtaken. But them's the brakes, and he'll come back stronger for it. He's having a storming season. Ferrari are on the up. McLaren are on the up. Give it up for Lando Norris. 15 races in a row now. He has scored points. That's the longest ever point-scoring streak for a McLaren driver ever. Daniel Ricciardo's back in the frame again. Oh, and Fernando Alonso. He's not doing too bad. Turns 40 today. Happy birthday, Fernando Alonso.
Birthday.
Born on the same day that Charles and Diana got wed.
Wow, can you hear the drums, Fernando? do you know who I think is the biggest superstar in F1?
Go on.
You.
No.
No, I do. I actually do. I do. You bring it to the masses. You're amazing. Let's get rid of this bromance now. It's making people throw up over the breakfast. Goodbye, Crofty.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's the rugby nut that's heading up TalkSports Live in exclusive coverage of all three British and Irish Lions tests, and he's here to take us right into the heart of the scrum. So friends, Romans, countrymen, lend us your cauliflower ears and listen to the wonderful Craig Doyle.
Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. I want to be woken up like that every morning.
Well, you can for a price. So, Craig, apparently you're not in South Africa, but you are on the way. Via where?
County Wicklow, Ireland at the moment.
All right.
Yes.
So what's the British and Irish Lions vibe around where you live?
It's huge because obviously the British and Irish Lions are the best rugby players in England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. So everybody gets excited. It's one of those rare moments when we all start cheering for each other. And so everyone's popping around in their jerseys. Come Friday, they'll all be wearing their Lions jerseys around the place, just like in London and Edinburgh and Cardiff and everywhere. And there's a great buzz about it. I love all the South African jerseys. I don't know if you noticed in London, a lot of South African jerseys being worn at the moment. Big community there. So it's lovely. It's like this kind of World Six Nations vibe that happens. So yeah, it's very, very special.
It is very cool. Now, you have a preview show on TalkSport on Friday. Tell us about that.
We have a couple of hours where we kind of build up towards the game with Ben Kay, the brilliant James Haskell, and we just have a bit of crack talking rugby and kind of giving everyone a bit of info. Rugby's complicated and confusing, so we have to give them a bit of homework, a few cog notes to get through the match the next day. And then I think this Saturday we're coming from the Cabbage Patch Pub in Twickenham, because last weekend we visited all loads of pubs around the country and everyone was just kind of having a great time watching the game. We decided to join them. So that's what we're doing this Saturday.
Now, that's quite famous, isn't it, that pub for rugby?
It is. It's not a. It's a short walk too, but a longer walk home, I have to say, to the Cabbage Patch from Twickenham Stadium. It's a great pub, big outdoor area, and it's just where everyone goes after games and has a bit of crack. You know, Chris, you've been to the big games. There's a lovely atmosphere there. So we're just kind of checking in with all of that on Saturday and trying to hopefully get that on the radio.
Right now, the game itself, or you know, the series itself thus far, we're 1-0 up in the Test series after the tour matches. Now, I didn't get to see the game. It was, we showed it on the big screen, one of the big screens at Carfest North, but thousands of people were in front of that screen. And the general vibe I was getting is that we nicked it. Is that about right?
Yeah, I'd say that's right. Yeah, we were down at halftime 12-3. South Africans are like the school ground bullies. They're just big guys, big units, right? They're like tractors with legs and they just go around and smash people. And they did that for the first half hour. And we picked a team, the Lions, we picked a team that was kind of a bit more dynamic and could play a bit of rugby, but it wasn't a day for that. It was the day to kind of bully them back. And that's what happened. In the second half, they just got a bit more physical and we nicked it. They had two disallowed tries. And which is interesting because the television match official, the one who makes the ultimate call, was a South African, which caused a lot of controversy. And I guess they got in his ear a little bit and he disallowed two South African tries. So we shouldn't have won it, but we did. So this is huge. If we win this next match, there's only three games, we win the series, which is amazing.
So it's all about momentum, isn't it, as always? Yeah. So it's better that we try and finish the job on Saturday. But for the sake of entertainment, it'd be great to go to a decider.
You know what we all want to happen. Let's be honest. We want it to be a close game on Saturday and we want South Africa to win. And then we've the third and final test, 1-1. It happened against New Zealand 4 years ago. Do you remember that? And it was a draw in the end, an amazing scene with Sam Warburton at the end. We want that. We want the big decider, right? The big X factor moment. So hopefully that'll happen. I have to be, because you don't want to go into a third test when it's all done and dusted.
No,
really,
not really. Not really. You don't really want to show tests because the hearts won't be in it. They'll say they are, but they just can't be. Not in the same way, at least. Now, Vassis wants to chat about the South African coach.
Yeah, he's quite good value, isn't he, Razzie Erasmus?
Razzie Erasmus. With a name like that, you got to be good value, right? Yeah, so he's done this weird thing, right? So, you know, you got a water boy. Usually one of your players who travels but isn't actually playing brings the water on. And what they'll do is they have a little earpiece in and the coach will put messages in the ear like, tell the big lad to smash guys, more guys, or tell him to pass more, or tell him to kick more, or whatever. But Razzie Erasmus has decided, now he's the big boss, right? He's the big honcho. He's decided to be the water boy. So he's running on the pitch, right, giving water to the players during breaks. But what he forgot to do in one of the games was bring any water on. He had an empty bottle, and they're like, he was just basically coaching the team from the pitch, which is disallowed. But he also goes on Twitter and starts kind of slanking people off.
Has a pop.
And saying, oh, he has a little pop. But he's only doing that trying to wind the referee up. That's all.
Okay, so if we want to come and join you at the Cabbage Patch, we probably can't, can we? It's probably some kind of sellout or ticket out or something like that.
No, come on down.
You say that, but
I've never had a ticket thing in my life. Come on down.
Okay, all right. Listen, well, I know you're loving it, you know, and who wouldn't love going on a rugby pub crawl? And the fact you survived. Do you have a sort of strategy for making it to the end of the day and still being able to speak, or once the microphone's off, do you get turned on? How does it work?
Just go hard. Go hard.
You don't. You can't go hard.
Yeah, do. Go hard.
Really?
Go hard, go strong, go long.
What time
hard,
do you...
Strong, long.
Do you actually have a beer during the show?
Maybe.
Yeah. All right, so give us...
More than like 3 or 4, though. Like, I'm not a lunatic.
All right. I didn't say you were, Craig. I didn't say you were, but you seem to... That word seemed to spring forth of its own accord. But then we are talking about the British Lions and Irish Lions tour. So what time is the preview show on TalkSport on Friday? And what
7
time...
7 o'clock to 10.
Right, 7 to 10.
7 to 10 on Friday. Yeah. And then we're on air 4 o'clock on Saturday And it's such a brilliant sport on radio. I know that sounds crazy, but it really is, because we describe every little nuance and little smash and try and moments and tear, and it's fantastic.
Well, yeah. or at least you think you do.
Well, I don't know what's happening. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, exactly. Good. If you're having a good time, we're having a good time. Craig, great to talk to you, pal.
Yeah, and you. Lovely to hear from you.
Okay, great. What a lovely bloke.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. Virgin
Radio. If you can't start your day without a coffee and have ever wondered why, our next guest is the man with the answers. His new book, This Is Your Mind on Plants, is out now. So listen up as we ayahuasca the right questions and opium he gives the right answers. It's the mind-bending marvel that is Michael Pollan.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for staying up or getting up at 1:30 in California to talk to us. This Is Your Mind on Plants, your latest, greatest book, Opium, Caffeine and Mescaline. It's divided into three sections, and I understand that that therefore provided you with three writing challenges.
Oh, totally. Yeah, the first one was about growing my own opium, which turns out to be illegal. I didn't know that when I started. And I got into a situation where I finished a piece. I wrote it for Harper's Magazine at the height of the drug war. And lawyers read it and said, "You can't publish this. That's a confession to a federal crime." In the end, I did publish it, but I had to censor it. I had to take out two sections, one about how you turn opium poppies, which many people have in their gardens, into a mild narcotic tea. And the other was what it felt like to drink the tea. So that act of self-censorship, I never felt good about that and wanted to correct it. So this was my opportunity to publish the piece as it should be, with all the pages restored.
It is really enjoyable, and you talk so knowledgeably about everything. You know, you begin to speak the language of neuroscience, which I know you've done before anyway, but it's beautiful. Mm. It's also really funny as well. Tell everyone about the irony of the ladies from the Temperance Society, who, whilst fighting against the projected potential evils of alcohol, took a break by doing what?
By drinking women's tonics that contained laudanum, which is opium. Yeah, it was a very interesting. If you go back to the era of temperance and prohibition in the United States, it was illegal to drink alcohol, to make alcohol. But at the same time, it was perfectly legal to consume opium or morphine and also to consume cannabis. These were sold over the counter in these women's tonics, they were called. It was kind of, and women would kick back with these opium drinks. This is in the, 1910s and 1920s. And it's a reminder that the drugs we consider evil now weren't necessarily that at another period in history. And that it's the identity of these drugs, what's good, what's bad, is constantly changing as society changes. And right now in America, psychedelics are undergoing a change. Drugs like psilocybin and LSD are getting a second look as possible therapies. So they're going from having been very demonized and disruptive to society to now becoming possibly an important treatment for mental health. So I think that, we have to understand that whatever you've learned about a given drug may change as society changes and as our understanding of what it can do for us changes. Drugs are tools. They're not inherently good or evil. They can be used in positive ways or negative ways. Even the opiates, which are creating such a crisis now, killing hundreds of thousands of Americans through overdose, they're a blessing to people with cancer. They're a blessing if you've ever had surgery. So it's all about the context in which we use them.
So in a world where alcohol is, widely legal and destructive and generally bad for one's health if one does it in the wrong way and too often, and smoking is, and processed food, salt, oil and sugar is now the most addictive thing on the planet. What's the problem?
Yeah. All those things are legal, by the way.
Yeah, where's the bump in the road? Where's the barrier here?
Well, it's ironic that I don't think alcohol should be made illegal. I don't think you can war on drugs. I think the drugs will win. We have done that. We tried prohibition and it was a failure. And we're trying prohibition of psychedelics now, and that too is a failure. But the irony is that psychedelics, as scary as some people think they are much safer than alcohol. there is no toxic dose of LSD or psilocybin, which is amazing. And there is a toxic dose for many of the drugs you have in your medicine cabinet. Also, psychedelics are not habit forming. You can't get addicted to them. They do have risks, without question. And if they're used in a poor way with lousy set and setting, you can have a terrifying experience. And some people have psychotic breaks on them. However, they are, as psychoactive drugs go, they're remarkably safe. And that was a big surprise to me because I had imbibed all that, all those scary urban legends about LSD that it would make you think you could jump off of buildings, that you would stare at the sun till you went blind, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, they're incredibly important tools. There are risks, as I say, but I think that the benefits outweigh the risks by a considerable amount.
Yeah, it's just the network, you know, of reducing that risk and introducing experts and guided treatments is
guiding is very important. Yeah. You know, anyone doing a high dose of psychedelics, it's very important that you have a guide, someone to be with you, keep you safe, make you feel safe, because it requires a surrender to really allow the process to work. You're going to sense your ego dissolving. Your sense of self may just completely explode into nothingness, and that can be terrifying if you're not with someone who can remind you that, you know, just surrender, it will get better, and it does.
Well, I can't recommend your book highly enough. I have done, and I'll try to continue to do so, but I can't recommend it highly enough. This is Your Mind on Plants by Michael Pollan, live on the line now from Southern California. Opium, caffeine, mescaline, a load of laughs in there as well, a load of fantastic pub ammo knowledge. Before you go, and we've only got 10 seconds left, Michael, can you just reassure people that if they buy this book, it will not increase their chances of being arrested, despite some crazy old laws to do with the war on drugs.
Yeah, you're growing of opium poppies, so hide it if the police come.
Yeah, all right. Cheers, Michael. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Over to you, Dapper Dave.
How big you are, why you eat what you eat, and what's in the food you love. No stone is left unturned by our next guest. The new podcast series, A Thorough Examination with Doctors Chris and Zand, is available now. So join us as we present with a severe case of interviewitis. It's Dr. Chris Van Tulleken.
Morning, Christopher.
I love that. I'm going to start doing it like that on Operation Ouch.
You should. You should take Dave with you. I mean, you know, reasonable rates. You know, we get a cut, don't we?
Yeah.
I think so. Okay. We're on commission. So, Christopher, this is very close to your heart, this brand new podcast of yours. Just set it up for us first, will you, if you don't mind?
So I went on a journey for BBC show called What Are We Feeding Our Kids, where I ate ultra-processed food for a month. And that was, it sort of became clear that ultra-processed food, which has a, it's a technical term, it's got a scientific definition, it's basically anything wrapped in plastic that has a funky ingredient that you do not have in your kitchen. So guar gum, xanthan gum, soy lecithin, you know, fatty acid emulsifiers. That is the single cause for the obesity pandemic. Now, I have an identical twin who's 20 kilos heavier than me. We have been fighting about this for a decade and a half. And so I thought, well, I'll make a podcast and that will force him to lose the weight. And it's sort of about ultra-processed food and the science of it, but it's really me trying to send my brother on a final binge in that kind of Alan Carr quit smoking method. Like, eat all this food while you speak to all these experts that I've set up,
yeah,
and it will make it disgusting for you.
In a kind of Super Size Me way.
It's sort of like Super Size Me, yeah. Yeah, so let it go. Just stop forbidding yourself this food. Enjoy it, eat it. And so the podcast is kind of, you can eat along while you listen to people schooling you in how repulsive our diet is in the UK, because this is 60% of what we eat.
And is the plan for him to bottom out?
Yes, I think so. It's the go. You know, you're caught smoking the cigarette by mum and dad. Smoke the whole pack.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But smoke the whole pack while you read the book on smoking.
Now, we should all know better, but you heard what I was talking about before and the clips I was playing, various clips I was playing from amazing things that are happening in other podcasts as well as your own. And one of the things mentioned in that conversation is the fact that education doesn't work, ultimately. It doesn't work. It helps massively. So it helps early adopters like us to get the bit between our teeth, but then you can become uselessly uselessly preachy about it. But what might happen somewhere amongst the noise is that you put things in front of consumers that, for example, taste better and are cheaper than things that are not as good for them. And this is how you have to approach it, isn't it? So this is the ultimate fix. So where are you on that journey?
So I've spent my whole life giving advice. The last 15 years on the BBC as a doctor on telly, it's all about giving advice.
In one ear, out the other.
And it's pointless. Yeah. Advice does no one any good. Especially with people who live with overweight, of which I'm one, or obesity, of which my brother is one. You know, these people. Remember Cancer Research UK did that campaign, obesity causes cancer.
Yeah.
Everyone knows this. When you're giving advice to millions of people with a problem, you have to go, not what is wrong with these lazy people? That's not the point. It's what is wrong with the environment they live in,
yeah.
Whether it's that they're smoking or that they are eating food that is deeply harmful for their bodies, and particularly children. I mean, children don't make a choice. They live in the world the adults create. So, yes, education is, I totally agree, of limited value. And that's why the podcast is not really very advicey. It's much more sort of, here's some stuff. But asking industry to solve the problem, you know, at the moment we have a food supply system which suits industry in the way we conceive of food, which is in terms of its nutritional content, its fat and sugar that make us fat. That's totally inaccurate. It is the processing. So we've had fat and sugar in our diet for ages. And the environment we live in means that industry can endlessly reformulate. So you start with full fat colas and then you go, oh, now we've got an obesity crisis. Let's make diet colas. Turns out diet colas drive obesity probably more than the original high sugar ones. And then we can put fiber in them. And then we can add, you know, phytonutrients. And you can endlessly iterate according to the fad of the moment, paleo, keto, low carb, high fat. And so we just get this cycle where all the food is increasing in the process.
Right, so you and your bro, this podcast is fascinating because, you know, it is almost master servant, patient, doctor relationship, but with the added twist of the fact you're
master servant.
You're twins and bros. And so you can be more candid with each other and therefore with us as a listener to the podcast. But also that has its challenges because there are some home truths in there. And it's a learning process, not just for Xander and, you know, his dietary adventure or epic journey at your hand, but also for you. And you both, it's a journey of self-discovery for both of you. Can you speak to that from both your point of views, please?
So I wanted a behavioural change expert, this guy Alistair Kant, who's like a magician. He's a psychologist, but he teaches the police and social workers how to help families at the most extreme end of behavioural change their behaviour. Their children are going to be taken away because of problems with drugs and alcohol. So he's the last port of call for changing behaviour. So I phoned him up and said, look, Alistair, can you just change Zand, make him eat less? And Alistair went, I don't need to speak to Zand, I need to speak to you. You are the problem.
Right.
And so anyone who's in a family knows that dynamic of someone, there's some maniac in the family, in my family it's me,
right,
just trying to regulate everyone and like stop eating that and you go and sit there. And
I'm a nuisance.
Yeah. But that comes with, you know, control is the dark side of love or affection. But Zahn's sort of much more laid back. So that dynamic is very harmful, and it emerges that I am really the architect of Zahn's weight gain in amongst all that. Because for him to lose the weight is to lose a 10-year argument with me.
A thorough examination, episodes 1 to 4, available now from wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a couple of takeaways. We're way over time, but I don't care. Give us a couple of takeaways from it.
It's not, what would I say?
What have you
it's
learned?
Not your, it's not, well, what? it's not a kind of advice giving. I didn't produce it. It aims to have this magical effect on you. There is a hypnosis effect with it that we work quite hard to create, where as you listen, it will become disgusting. So my advice would be sort of don't worry about this too much. Stop beating yourself up. Stop feeling guilty. At the moment, we are living in a country that is to ultra-processed food like we were to smoking in the 50s. We'd all have been sitting here smoking away. And if I'd said, could you put out your cigarettes? That would have been weird. And so just giving into the food, listen to the podcast, and stop beating yourself up and vote for change.
All right. It's great to see you. Always so welcome on the show. That microphone is always yours whenever you want it.
Thank you, Chris.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has made thousands of dishes on live TV and now wants to hear about everyone else's. His brand new celeb-filled podcast, Grilling, is out now. And here to give us some real food for thought on the weird, wonderful and downright bizarre recipes he's heard so far, it's Simon Rimmer.
Good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Lovely. Do you know what? Your timing is perfect, Simon. Do you know why?
Why?
Because you've got to settle an argument going on here, Simon. You are the man that knows everything about grilling. You know everything about cooking.
Everything.
You know everything, okay? You are the professor of it all.
Yes.
So now, Sam Pinkham thinks that grilling and griddling and barbecuing are all the same. They're not, are they, Simon Rimmer? Please say they're not, because that's what I say. Please.
Oh, well, they're not. Okay, so,
yes.
So here's the thing. So barbecuing is all-encompassing. So with barbecuing, then you could cook things quickly or you could cook things slowly. The grill is actually the plate on a barbecue. So whereas if you use your grill on your oven, then you'll only cook things quickly on that. It's always about kind of high heat. And then griddling is similar to barbecue, but that, again, could only be hot direct heat.
No, I don't agree.
No, so he's professor. He is the Professor Simon. So, Simon, I'm completely obsessed. I'm obsessed with barbecues, but completely obsessed. And if I could have a barbecue every single night of halloumi and corn on the cob. Corn on the cob on the barbecue. I don't think is anything greater.
I absolutely agree with you. And then what do you do with it? When you put your corn on the cob on the barbecue, do you then brush it with anything? Do you then put anything on it? Go on, what do you do?
I just put a little bit of oil and some salt, but I put it on without pre-cooking it. So I go raw and straight on there. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so next time you do it, rather than a bit of oil, are you vegan or just veggie, Gab?
Veggie.
Okay, right.
I do eat fish, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what you need to do is make yourself some miso butter.
Oh, so I love it.
Right, so buy some white miso paste, mix it with butter, and then when you start to get some charring on your sweet corn, brush miso butter onto it. It will revolutionise the way that sweet corn tastes.
What's the difference between miso butter and normal butter?
Well, basically, so miso is fermented soy paste. So it's almost, you know, that umami that everybody talks about, that kind of fourth dimension of flavours. Salty, it makes you feel a little bit exciting. You don't know what it is, but it's kind of like, it's like a really good snog. You know what I mean? So when you kiss somebody, you go, yeah, that's quite nice. But then when you properly kiss somebody, you go, wow, what's that extra dimension? That's what miso is.
It's the snog of the butter world.
Yeah, exactly that.
So,
yeah.
Simon, when you become a chef or when you become a cook, or you realise you're a good cook and you love cooking and you want to become a professional chef, do you make a decision what type of chef you're going to be, whether you're going to be a baker or a griller or a fryer or a roaster, or do you just... Yeah, do you have a sort of a preferred method of cooking?
So one of the premises of the podcast is about that moment. And the start of the podcast came when I was having a conversation with Tom Kerridge, you know, one of the greatest chefs in the UK. And we were just talking one day and he said he'd been working in various kitchens and he read White Heat by Marco Poi. And he said he read the way that Marco approached food and thought, I want to be like him.
How does each episode work, Simon? Talk us through the format of each episode.
Sorry, say again.
Each episode of your podcast, how does it work? Does it have a format to it? Do you ask five questions, apparently, to each guest?
About barbecuing? So the whole hour-long podcast, we kind of do the background, the history, and then we do a little break in the middle where it becomes sort of a little bit barbecuey. So we do the same five questions, favourite things of barbecue, any disasters, best barbecue experience. Then we also give them a 45-second recipe challenge where they have any cut of meat, fish or vegetables. They have to create a rub or a marinade. They have to do a side dish and they have to do a sauce. And they have to sell it to me like they're on a kind of like a slightly erotic kind of chat line. and it's really, really fantastic. It's really good. And then we kind of do, you know, what got them where they were, how they like to cook, what the future holds. So it's lovely. So instead of, you know what it's like, we're all in that situation where we interview people for 6, 8, 10 minutes. And with good guests, you think, oh, I'd love it to be longer. And the joy of all podcasts is the fact that you get to sit down and let people have a conversation and really sort of take it wherever it goes. And I think that's been the joyous thing about it, having a proper conversation with people.
Is it true that you invented pulled pork?
Yes.
Is it?
You know what? This is so brilliant because I did pulled pork on some of the weekend years ago.
Yeah.
Before that kind of thing, but you know, it just exploded. Anyway, and so I don't know why. I think it just was right time, right place. And it was apparently, at the time, the most downloaded recipe. In fact, no, it was when we just started Sunday Brunch. Most downloaded recipe on Sunday Brunch, including the likes of kind of Jamie Oliver and Gordon Ramsay. And I don't quite know why. And so Tim said that I invented it. And it just went that. And then somebody changed my Wikipedia. And, of course, whenever I say it now, you always get huge, you know how joyous Twitter can be. And people go, you didn't, it's been around for years and years and years. So, yeah, it's the greatest story ever told, I think.
And it's true, and we will stand by it.
Exactly, true. It's completely true, yeah. They do it in the States now as well, apparently. I've been over there, and apparently they do it over there.
Yeah, it's very amazing. New over there. It's very new.
Yeah.
Can I ask you just one last thing, if I may, because everybody turned their nose up when I said this. I'm obsessed with ice cream, and I'm obsessed with pickles. I know you and I have spoken about my obsession with pickles before. But it's good together, isn't it? Ice creams and pickles. Silence.
What?
Yes! Simon, it works.
Gabby, are you pregnant?
No, I'm really not. I promise you, I'm really not. I've been there, done that. Seriously not. But pickles and ice cream, and they're now making pickled ice cream.
Wow.
You have to do that on brunch.
I get it.
Do it on brunch next week.
Gabby, I promise you, I'm going to try that. I can see why it works.
Oh,
I really, really
delicious.
Can. But
really?
Do you have a particular flavour combination?
Well, see, I love pistachio ice cream. And so it really works with pickle.
Which pickle? What?
Pistachio pickled cucumbers.
Any pickled cucumbers.
I'm thinking, I tell you what would be nice, pickled pineapple.
Oh, yes!
Pickled pineapple. I'm
there.
Yeah,
barbecue pineapple.
Okay, I can see that.
Barbecued pickled pineapple. I'm there.
Simon, what an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, my lovely.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you. Take care.
His podcast is called Grilling. Episode 4 is out tomorrow. Get it wherever you hear podcasts. See you soon, Simon. Take care. Bye, mate. Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.